I'd like to welcome you to our next in our series of Global Perspectives podcasts dealing with a range of issues influencing health and its nexus to tobacco. Today, I'm really pleased to have my friend and colleague Daniel Milan join us. Daniel is currently the Assistant Professor of Business Ethics at Trinity College in Dublin and has a long background in looking at the issue of business values, ethics, and related performance. I remember, Daniel, when we first met, you were on the World Economic Forum's Global Council on Values. And at the time, the importance of companies addressing their social, environmental, and health responsibilities was becoming a major debate. Since then, we've seen that that world, worldwide and in the US, has taken off. I'd love to know whether you've seen any positive trends within industry and companies to address the negative impacts of their core businesses, and then comment on whether this has spilled over into the tobacco sector.
Derek, thanks very much for the invitation. It's really nice to have this conversation. I think I would agree with you that ESG and sustainability reporting, these issues have really taken off over the last 10 to 15 years. And we've seen global standard-setting bodies like the International Integrated Reporting Council and SASB and the GRI really come to the party with good, solid metrics and reporting standards. As a matter of fact, earlier this year, the World Economic Forum also launched a new white paper moving towards common metrics in the ESG space. So it's grown tremendously. And I would say, having observed this for a very long time now, I think we've shifted from companies doing this to avoid the negative rather than to embrace the positive. So it's always going to be sort of a balancing act between looking at the risks on the one side, but also understanding the opportunities when you get this right. And I think there the IRC's Six Capitals model has been really helpful to make us understand those so-called non-financial aspects, both as inputs and outputs. I think tobacco has always been in a tough position because the link between the tobacco companies and the very clear negative impact of the core product has been so abundantly clear for everybody to see. And how tobacco companies in the past tried to deal with that was, like many other companies, was just to come forward with some fairly bland CSR activities to say, well, we might make our money in an unethical way, but look at all the nice things that we're doing with it. And that simply doesn't work anymore, and it shouldn't. But I think the harm reduction space has really changed the debate here, and it's opened the sort of the gray area from an ethical point of view, say that here are products produced by an industry that has been on the wrong side of ethics for a very long time. But this can really make a difference, and that sort of fits into the ESG metrics, and I think it has caught many of the traditional opponents of tobacco off guard, and they find it hard to accept that there is actually a grey area from an ethical point of view.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you, Daniel, and we're going to come back to that in a second. Your latest report, just coming out, Conflict and Contradictions, highlights the importance of understanding the extent and impact of state ownership of major tobacco companies. What was the goal of the report, and what do you see as some of the important results that you've actually shown?
The report highlights the contradictions in the World Health Organization's Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, the FCTC. And it argues that there are substantial conflicts of interest when governments who are signatories to the FCTC also own tobacco companies. Because on the one hand, those countries are committed to be part of the global fight against the tobacco pandemic, but at the same time, they have real strong commercial interests in the industry. And part of the research of the report was to investigate exactly what is the nature and the scale of this problem. And we found that today there are 18 countries in the world where governments own 10% or more of at least one tobacco company. And of these 18 countries, 17 of those are signatories to the FCTC. Only Malawi is the exception there. And 8 of those countries own 100% of at least one tobacco company. So taking that data as a point of departure, we then, you know, asked very serious questions about the nature of state ownership in the tobacco industry, and also to try and estimate, or, you know, to make some more data on the impact that it's had on the overall use of tobacco. To give you one example, if you look at the time frame from 2000 to 2019, overall tobacco use declined by less than a quarter of a percentage point per year, which is not great. And then if we put that next to the fact that if you look at these numbers, more than 50% of the global cigarette industry is actually controlled by governments who are also signatories to the FCTC, I think that contradiction becomes rather glaring. And that was the main focus area of the report.
Yeah, I think it's quite fascinating that even in my years at the World Health Organization, we didn't have this data. I think this is the first time it's ever been put out in a public forum the way it is. Yet it raises the question of why is it that when the public, NGOs, WHO, refer to big tobacco, they so rarely mention the very huge size and impact of the state monopolies, particularly the biggest of the lot, the Chinese state monopoly. Any sense of why this is the case?
Yeah, I think we can only speculate, and I think it must be, first of all, because of this heavily skewed situation where 44% of the global cigarette market is actually controlled by one company in one country. So one can understand, you know, from a consumer point of view, if you look around the world, and also other stakeholders, that they will be more familiar with the big brands that they know within their own market. So unless you really make it your business to understand the state-owned players, who I think also by definition will have a lower profile because they do not have the same sophisticated marketing, you know, and promotional activities than private sector companies. Unless you really make it your business to know that, those names are not going to be mentioned. But one would expect the WHO, for example, not to fall into this trap and to really be familiar with the numbers and the scale. But even there, what we picked up in the report is that there seems to be a different way of dealing with the state-owned companies. Case in point being the 2019 report on the global tobacco epidemic, where China National Tobacco Corporation is not mentioned once in the report, but there are more than 20 references to listed companies such as Philip Morris or British American Tobacco.
It is quite extraordinary. I mean, I know one thing which is useful to reflect on is that the multinationals are subject to stakeholder pressure, which in the case of leading tobacco companies tend to be the major institutions, the banks, the holder of pension funds. And that presumably has some impact on accountability. How is the pressure and accountability asserted on a state monopoly in contrast to a multinational?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think institutional investors are extremely powerful, and we've seen the impact that can have. And again, if we go back into the history of responsible investment, I think there are mainly two drivers for that, both commercial and ethical. I'm not talking about tobacco in particular here, but the whole ESG agenda. Big institutional investors understand now that it is both the right thing to do, but also in their own long-term interest, you know, to put pressure on companies to behave in a responsible way. But when the state is the owner, these pressures fall away because the state does not have to respond to those short-term, sometimes short-term, sometimes long-term sort of financial interests of big institutional investors. So in theory, that's actually a benefit because the state, you know, when they don't have to respond to those sometimes unreasonable demands, one can sort of expect them to be more willing to do the right thing. And also because in democracies they are sort of voted in by the electorate, They are supposed to have the common good, you know, on their agenda, and to shy away from some of those short-term commercial interests. But whether they do that or not, I think that that's a different question. And specifically, if you look at the responsible investment arena in the private sector with those pension funds and the big institutional investors, I think they managed to achieve more than the state as owner.
Yeah, just one last question on that. Obviously governments have a dilemma. On the one hand, there's the finance department and the people on the commerce side pushing for them to maximize their fiduciary responsibility, earn as much profits and taxes from tobacco that they can. And then there's the health ministry and social welfare pushing to minimize the health impacts. Is there any way they can resolve that dilemma short of selling off the tobacco company or privatizing it, which probably is not necessarily going to solve the problem, but at least it shifts it off the government books? But are there things they could learn from multinationals that actually may help them maintain some of their fiduciary needs while actually addressing the health realities?
Yeah, I think that's critical. The way in which I would sort of approach that would be to say, first of all, that I don't think it's possible in any scenario for, you know, whether that's a government department where you have health on the one hand and finance on the other, to really operate independently without interference with each other. And certainly in the private sector and coming back to the ESG environment, we see integrated thinking and integrated reporting coming more to the fore, where we have to understand that these things are all interlinked. Getting out of this difficult position, yes, selling off the assets as quickly as possible would certainly be a short-term solution to avoiding those conflicts. But I wouldn't necessarily agree with that strategy. For the sort of the main reason being that if we look at how state-owned companies perform when they are privatized, and again, this is not linked specifically to the tobacco industry, but usually they perform better. And that's also, you know, in many countries, the argument is to say, let's get these companies out of government because business can run them more efficiently and make more profits. And if that's going to happen to tobacco when they're sold off, then those will be the unintended consequences, that indeed more harm will be caused than ever before. So I believe that probably the most pragmatic option here would be to say, let's acknowledge the conflict, let's deal honestly and seriously with these contradictions and the conflicts, acknowledge that they are there, but manage them. And that is perfectly acceptable in terms of any corporate governance practice anywhere around the world. You don't need to always avoid conflicts, but you can manage them. And that is where, once again, I would say these benefits of state ownership, then the fact that you do not have to respond to sort of sometimes unreasonable demands of shareholders would come into play, and governments can really step up to the plate and say, we want to be responsible.
Yeah, so would that, for example, mean if they were to step up their involvement in tobacco harm reduction, maybe learn from some of the companies starting to do it, they could both be a powerhouse of leadership and actually solve both the health and some of their financial needs?
Exactly, and that is a perfect example of how you manage the conflict by looking at these more creative and innovative ways of dealing with the issue. That's acceptable from an ethical point of view. And it is not, black and white. Ed Freeman, who's the father of stakeholder theory, has recently published a new book that he calls The Power of And. And he argues that we must get away from this saints and sinners dichotomy. You know, it's never going to be, you know, either completely good or completely bad. And by exploring this gray area, getting involved in tobacco harm reduction, while at the same time, you know, acknowledging that you're still going to own an interest in tobacco and sell those cigarettes and earn taxes from them, that's part of the complex reality. But if we simply say you have to choose either the one or the other, it's not going to happen, and then more people will be harmed than ever before.
Great. Sorry, just one last question, Daniel. It also occurs to me that on the revenue they gain side, there could perhaps be something more that the governments could be doing. I think back to the years when Thailand, Malaysia, a range of countries, the state of California, a number of states in Australia, recognized that if they actually earmarked a proportion of the excise tax coming from tobacco for health promotion generally, they would be doing several things. They'd be promoting the health of their population and doing it with probably the most politically acceptable way of actually using taxes. And yet we've seen economists move away from that for their fear of earmarking, not in principle against using it. But I just wonder whether that's a debate we need to bring back, particularly in the light of the fact that the state monopolies are gaining a lot of revenue, a lot of taxes. If they were to actually be showing explicitly how some of that would be going towards health promotion, it would also maybe ease the path forward for them.
I think that's certainly something that's worth exploring. And obviously, the most important prerequisite there would have to be transparency in terms of how you collect those taxes and how you manage them, report on them. And I think that's going to be easier in some countries than in others. But the principle behind it, I think, to see that direct link is one that I would support.
Well, Daniel, I hope that you and your family are taking care during the pandemic. And we know that it's going to be, unfortunately, several months before we can actually feel free to go about without masks. But in the interim, please stay safe. And to everybody out there, you can learn more about both the foundation and how you can actually get to read Conflict of Contradictions by contacting us at podcast@smokefreeworld.org. Thank you very much.